Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, whatever it is, wherever you are. Ladies and gentlemen, and everyone in between, you're listening to the Paul DeWayne Show. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm really excited about our show today. I, some time ago, met an exceedingly interesting person that finally has come on the show. We're going to be talking today about power struggles. We're going to be talking about the battle between church and state. We're going to be talking about possible corruption in high places. That's what I want to get to the bottom of. Here in Utah, where we record the show, many of you are probably familiar. We have the headquarters of the LDS Church here and a very, very conservative power structure in the state, in our state government. And so there are a lot of very close ties between the very conservative LDS Church and the very conservative legislature. And this leads to some pretty nefarious outcomes here in the state. And those of you in other states undoubtedly have similar things that go on. So I do hope that today's story is something that you all can relate to. Before we get into that, I want to give some love to one of our great sponsors. You guys have heard me talk about Five Wives Vodka. They've got another line that's come out called Porter's Fire. And this is a great, not only is it a great cinnamon whiskey, but it has a story behind it. So if you want to be really cool at your next party, go order a bottle of Porter's Fire from hightimewine.net. Go to hightimewine.net and order Porter's Fire, and then get online. Google that. Find out who Porter Rockwell was. He was one of Brigham Young's right-hand men, did all of his dirty deeds. Lots of great stories. So all your kicking back shots at Porter's Fire with your buddies, you can tell them about the Wild West and all the things Porter Rockwell did. So much, much love to the folks from Five Wives Vodka and Porter's Fire. Thanks for supporting the show. And any of you in Utah, of course, can pick that up at the state liquor stores. So let's jump right into it. A while ago, I met a gentleman named Justin Anderson. He joins me on the show. Justin, say hi.
Hi. Thank you, Paul.
Thanks. So you are a self-titled citizen lobbyist, political activist.
Yes, with whatever that means.
Okay. So the reason I got really interested in talking to you is I'd noticed you have a lot of ties to, in social media, you were talking about being in meetings with the upper leadership of the LDS Church, and then you also are very involved in state politics.
Yes.
And some very libertarian-leaning stuff. I'm not quite sure which card you carry in your wallet, but you're a fellow lover of freedom. I do know that.
I do love freedom.
Yes, yes. So very, very quickly, tell us just a little bit about what you're doing at the Capitol and what you're involved. Actually, not so much at the Capitol, but what you're doing politically and then why you're and how you're connected to the church.
Okay. Well, I'm a former state representative with Young Americans for Liberty and former campus coordinator with Students for Liberty. Both of those are very libertarian from Ron Paul's campaign. I also used to be employed with Americans for Prosperity, one of the largest economic nonprofits in the country, as well as I've also worked with many other candidates and also on presidential campaigns as well. I've worked with the legislature for 2 years now on different issues, and I'm also a member of the LDS Church or the Mormon Church, where I am an active member, and I assist the top leaders with political consulting.
And it may be relevant to note that you're a convert to the church.
Yes.
When did you join the church?
In 2009, from right. Southern Baptist. Gets more interesting.
Why not? So let's get back to what you're doing with the church. As far as your advising role there, tell us a little bit more about that.
My meetings usually consist of five members. I meet with two members of the Quorum of the 12 Apostles.
And for those that aren't familiar, in the LDS Church, the upper echelon of leadership is called the Quorum of the 12 Apostles, and it is faithful Mormons believe this to be an analogous construct to Jesus's 12 apostles. The same power, same role. They're modern versions of that. And so you're meeting with members of that group.
Yes. I meet with two of the apostles, and we call them apostles, and I meet with a member of the Presidency of the 70, which is the next ranking group of leadership, and as well as two members of the 70, which are regional representatives for the church throughout the world.
How did you land this gig?
I ask myself that every day.
You're a young guy.
I am very young. I used to work as an assistant to the apostles in our flagship temple, in the Salt Lake Temple, where I got to rub shoulders with them and got to talk about very serious topics. And I disagreed with them a lot. And so they wanted me to bring me up into their chambers, I guess, so to speak, to talk about more issues more deeply, especially where we disagree.
What were some of the issues? It's interesting to me that they said, hey, here's a kid that disagrees with us. Let's talk to him more.
I would provoke the conversations. It was anything from aspects of church history, whether anything that has happened there within the church, or LGBT equality, the church's involvement with the government that predates to over a century, and other aspects. And so the more we've had these conversations, the more they understood that I wasn't just another dumb kid, that I had a little bit more to me. And so they definitely saw that, I believe, and that is what brought me into the position I am where I am today.
So is this an official capacity? Is this an informal thing? Like, how would you characterize what you're doing with them?
It's very informal, unpaid, without a paper trail, which happens often with big organizations, especially as you discuss politics. So.
Gotcha. So can you name who you're meeting with up there?
Yeah, it depends on the issue. I'll meet with Elder Christofferson, one of the apostles, Elder Oaks, who was a former Utah Supreme Court justice. There is Elder Ballard, President Packer,
a few
times. It varies, but they're all within those different three organizations that I mentioned of leadership.
How often are you meeting with those guys?
It depends how bad they want to get involved in politics. Over the LGBT issues, at least once a month. I help them draft their public relations statements and the first presidency statements that are released throughout the church.
You were part of those? Were those disasters?
They ended up being disasters. Not because of me. Not because of me. So they review my work. So it's on them. As well as with what's happening with the legislature a couple times a month, just depending on the issues.
Gotcha. And it's this kind of a seasonal thing then? I mean, because right now we're in the middle of our legislative session here in Utah, so everything's buzzing. You know, during the course of a year, is there a busy season? Is there a time when they're not really paying much attention?
There was a busy season when the Supreme Court was expected to make their decision on the Obergefell case, which made marriage equality the law throughout the 50 states.
Gotcha.
So that was a very big.
So seasonal, depending on what's happening in national politics as well.
Absolutely.
Got it. So you've mentioned that you had something to do with advising them on their policy regarding how gay people are treated in the church.
Yes.
We're going to get into that. We have here in Utah, we have a major, major battle going on to get medical marijuana legalized here in the state.
Pretty big battle.
They've weighed in on that, apparently.
They have. We've all heard about it.
Yeah, yeah. So when we come back here in a couple minutes, we're going to talk more about those things. In the meantime, I want to let you guys know, if you want to connect with the show, I've got social media platforms, really on all of the things. But the three places you can connect with the show most easily are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, at the Paul DeWayne. That's at TheePaulDuane. So definitely check those out when the show is not on the air. Jump over, see what's going on during the week. There's always, always things happening. So check us out at the Paul DeWayne, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. So we're going to take a quick break and hear a few words from our network sponsors. Sit tight. We'll be back here with Justin Anderson here in just a couple minutes here on the Paul DeWayne Show.
I hope you've been enjoying today's show. I've been loving making these new shows for you. In addition to the new shows, I've been creating some cool extras for those who want more in their life. I've got a series of conference calls and video conferences with thought leaders in the areas of politics and art and entertainment, basically the people we talk to on the show, and I've got an opportunity for you to sit in on those once a month. I even do a completely handwritten newsletter where I share some of my thoughts and doodles and just all kinds of ridiculousness that I never share with people in the online world. That comes your house once a month via first class mail. Who gets mail anymore? You can. If you want to get your hands on some of these cool extras, go over to the show website, pauldewayne.net, PaulDuane.net. At the top of the page, click the Patreon link. That's Patreon. That'll take you over to the page where you can join Inner Circle. The Inner Circle gives you these cool extras in your life, and it helps sustain the show, helps row our boat. Thank you so much for being part of the show. Love you guys. I'll see you soon. Welcome back. You're listening to The Paul DeWayne Show. On today's episode, we've got Justin Anderson. He is a citizen lobbyist and political activist that's involved in both state politics and advising the ever-powerful Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints that's headquartered here and is really quite a political powerhouse in the state of Utah. And they've weighed in on things nationally as well in the past. So you're privy to some really interesting things up there because you advise some of the upper leadership of the church. I want to jump right into the LGBT stuff. So great, right?
We all know how this is going to go.
If you were to describe to a non-member the church's stance on gays, what would it be?
We love all of God's children except the following. I can give you the list, but I think we all know what's going to follow that. So.
And this changed over the years.
It has.
It used to be except for brown people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That changed.
That did change.
Just a couple decades ago.
Mm-hmm. Recently. But yeah, in the past, the church had a very discriminatory, they discriminated against people of color, not allowing them full fellowship in the church.
Yes.
And that was changed in 1978. Right, when President Kimball received a revelation from God saying that all people could be treated the same. Big deal. That was a really big deal.
That was a very big deal.
Back then, yeah.
Very big deal.
I didn't mean that facetiously, but...
Treating people with respect is a very big deal when we hit that milestone.
So here we are, you know, we've got the situation with gay marriage becoming legal, and then this has raised a lot of questions as far as people with same-sex attraction in Mormonism, where do they fit in? And I want to just jump right to, you know, it would probably suffice right now just to say that same-sex attraction is viewed as a sin, or homosexuality. Homosexual acts are seen as a sin in Mormonism.
The attraction is not seen as a sin. Just acting on the attraction is according to the church.
Which would disqualify you from all kinds of, all the good things in the church.
And it would disqualify you from membership in the church.
Right. So let's talk about the day when the Supreme Court decision came out that made same-sex marriage legal in the United States. What happened at church headquarters?
Oh my goodness. I was on my couch watching the news live when the Supreme Court decision came out that we were all waiting for throughout the country, whether you're for or against. And I get a phone call right after that happens asking me to come down to the church headquarters immediately. So I arrive at the church headquarters. They bring me up and we have all the entire church legal team as well as various leaders around this table in the conference room, and we're all trying to decide what we're going to do because there's this fear that the church will be forced to marry people of the same sex together and that their position is hell or high water. It's not happening. And so we were really trying to figure out what to do, and there was a lot of fear that day and discussing how the church was going to implement any new policies if they were going to at all.
Now, why were they afraid that they'd be forced to do gay marriages? I mean, the church it's a private organization.
Great question.
Why were they afraid of this?
I think it's a fear of just the evangelical right. There's this huge persecution complex that exists that they may be forced to do something against their religious beliefs, maybe because of a rare story that Fox News may run on a Friday night that gains more traction because of the news adding legitimacy opposed to our judicial process.
But I mean, just from a strictly legal perspective, there is no basis for a church being forced to perform any ordinance that it doesn't want to.
You're absolutely right. There's actually several pages in the Obergefell decision that clarifies very clearly the church's protection in matters of LGBT equality.
And so, Elder Oakes is a former high-ranking lawyer and judge. And I mean, why the fear? I mean, I haven't been able to figure this out. These are ostensibly really smart guys that should be able to read the legalese very clearly and understand that this was not a threat to them, but yet they're still acting like it was. What's your feeling on that? Like, what?
I don't exactly understand the fear, especially with Elder Oaks being a former Utah Supreme Court justice. But I think that it goes to a lot of fear of the faith and the religion as well. If we believe this is something that God has directed, our scriptures tell us that do as God commands and he will find a way. Do what is right and let the consequence follow. So if this is what we truly believe, we should have no fear. Fear right. is the absence of faith. And so this goes, as we're talking about religion, this is much more than just legalese. This is much more of the faith that we have in our own religion.
So tell me a little bit more about the discussions that were happening around the table and how they issued a statement.
Yes.
Can you tell me about how that statement was crafted?
Yeah, so there's a few 70s and apostles and myself. We helped craft the statement that was read in all the congregations throughout the United States and Canada following the Supreme Court decision that happened the first Sunday and second Sunday following the decision. And the paragraphs I helped assist with were in the last part of the statement that focused on love and compassion upon those who identify as LGBT. But they had to release a statement because they've really been so involved with spending tithing funds and fighting this case. And so it seems like it was a defeat against the church because the church was fighting this. And in our faith, if the church fights it, then God fights it and God doesn't lose. And so for a lot of members, it looked like God lost. And so the church had to come out with a statement to reaffirm to the general membership.
And then we have the page in the church handbook of instructions that was, I don't know how you want to say it, leaked?
Yeah, it was leaked.
John DeLynn. Okay, so to bring our listeners up to speed, every bishop in the church has a big fat handbook of rules and regulations and processes. And at some point in time, there was an update that was issued that essentially said that children of gay parents in the church cannot be given full access to all the blessings of the church until they're 18 and they renounce their parents' marriage. And can you tell me a little bit more? Do you know anything about how that was crafted?
So that hit me out of nowhere. I usually am in the loop on any of those decisions, but that one definitely came out of nowhere for me. It was released on November 5th in the afternoon, and it essentially treats children of gay parents as blacks were treated pre-1978. Can't be baptized, and if you are baptized, there's no advancement in the church for you, no mission, no temple, no priesthood, none of the privileges given to the general membership. And
it's like a modern-day Mark of Cain.
Yes, that we usually actually used to use that term until right. it became unpopular.
Right.
And so I've had a discussion since then with Elder Oaks of the Quorum of the 12 Apostles about this policy exactly, and he mentioned the law and being afraid of possible lawsuits for teaching children of same-sex parents that their children, that their parents are not worthy of God. And so they're really worried about any possible lawsuits that can come from that.
So they're basically just trying to cut out, this was damage control.
Damage control and afraid of, we like our money. So we're afraid of lawsuits. And so this is what it really came down to. We put lawsuits and attorneys above innocent children.
So you just admitted that the church uses tithing funds to fight these things.
Yeah.
And you have admitted also that it's about money more than it is about loving the children.
Yes, from the conversation I had with Elder Oaks, it definitely, that was the short discussion.
Of course, you're not speaking on behalf of the church. These are your opinions, obviously.
This is my opinion, and from conversations I've had with the leaders of the church.
And you're not afraid of saying this and facing some sort of discipline for saying these things?
There used to be a time where we used to be afraid to speak truth and to focus on principles and values. But I think that we should never be afraid of truth, of value or principles, or to stand on that.
Do you still work as an assistant to the apostles?
I may not after this, but I currently do. So I'm not paid. Yeah, so they just call me, say, hey, we need you to come in. I go in and I meet with members of the leadership of the church into the church office building. We usually have an agenda of items we discuss, whether it's legislation or church policies. And
what do you do? What is your expertise? How do you consult them? What do you consult them about?
So on the legislation, it's just from my work with the legislature and the various political parties in Utah. The reason why I consult on the church policies and the handbook itself is because of my acquaintances with several well-known members of the church who have left over issues, and my affiliation with them, as well as being outspoken on these policies at church and in institute. The church is aware of that, and so they brought me in because I disagree with them so much for a discussion.
And because you represent a large portion of the members.
I do. And so we have very good discussions. So and that's what they're looking for. Because a lot of times they don't have that. And so I go up there and I'm like, look, this is what 25% of the church currently thinks about this. And we can have a very civil, respectful discussion.
We've got to take a quick break, unfortunately.
We'll definitely come back.
Okay, we're going to come back to this. Sit tight. We'll be back with Justin Anderson here on the Paul DeWayne Show in just a moment. Show today we're talking to Justin Anderson. He's a political advisor for informally for the LDS Church here in Salt Lake City, and we've been talking about what happened when the Supreme Court decision came out regarding LGBT people. And you were in our last segment, you were mentioning that their position on this is largely fueled out of legal defense concerns.
Yes, not a single principle or doctrine was mentioned in my conversation evolving around this. Usually I go with my scriptures because I'm assuming we're going to talk about the church in the sense of doctrine and God. But a lot of times it's from a public relations position or an advisement from the chief legal counsel of the church.
So there was a moment when President Nelson came out and made a public statement saying that this new policy that the church had about the children of gay people was actually a revelation from God given to the prophet, President Monson.
Yes, he did say that.
He did say those things.
A few weeks ago to the entire church in a young adult devotional that I was actually attending.
Do you have any behind the scenes insight as to how that came about?
Not that one specifically. I wish I did.
What was going on at church headquarters the next day? I mean,
all hell broke loose. That week, my institute teacher told me that the institute at the University of Utah received record numbers of students coming in wanting to resign from the church because of President Nelson's remarks about the revelation. They actually have dissolved several congregations in Salt Lake following this and have held emergency conferences with apostles, with the general membership, to try to quell the concerns and issues right now.
Do you believe that was a revelation from God?
Absolutely not.
Why not?
Several reasons.
I mean, President Nelson said it was.
They also said several things in the past for revelation. I believe what he did was blasphemy to suggest that God had said something when he did not.
When you say that you believe he did not say that, where is that coming from? Is this Justin's heart speaking, or do you have some backroom insight there?
Not only my heart speaking, but we have a set of scriptures in the Mormon church called the Doctrine and Covenants, which is Christ telling the church how the church has to run. And the prophet and President Nelson broke many commandments that Christ gave the church in how revelation should be handled. And so I go back to the scriptures, and according to what Christ said, that is not a revelation. And so really, President Nelson is asking me to follow him or Christ. And so I made my decision.
It's very brave of you. to say what you've said.
It is. With great hesitancy, I say it because of the machine of the Mormon Church in Utah and how it's run.
Are you afraid of something coming of speaking like this?
I could be kicked out of my university. I could lose my job. I could lose my housing. I could lose many of my friends. And I could have to start my life entirely over if they do not like what I said. So it's not said with ease or comfort.
And I told you before the show, I'm going to ask some questions, and you can put up a blockade anytime.
You absolutely did.
Yeah. That's heavy, man. That's really heavy. That's really heavy.
It is. It sure is.
I need to drink some beer. Hold on a second. Jeez.
He said he's not afraid of the truth.
I know. I know. This guy is amazing.
My hero!
Woo! Oh, you guys
really
are too nice.
Yeah.
So I want to get into, we're winding down. I want to get some cannabis talk in here.
Okay.
So let's jump back into this. Michelle, did you have
quick.
A question you want to field real quick?
Well,
I mean, we're still rolling.
Is,
we're still rolling.
I really love everything you've saying. You validate so many members of the church who I think are afraid to speak up, even true believers and people all over the world, all over the spectrum of Mormonism, who are afraid to say what you just said. So thank you for the validation. I want to know, as a Mormon myself who still goes every week, and I'm on the spectrum, I'm not on one end or the other, I'm in the middle
spectrum.
Somewhere. I'm on
like
the. I'm on
about
there.
Autism.
My yeah. question is for you, for those of us who follow truth and follow Jesus Christ, is there anything we can do? And if there is, what can we do to see change in the church and to help the church change? Not, I mean, I don't. I'd hate to force something, but what can we do to get to the higher ups, all the way to the top, to for there to be change?
I don't think we have to go to the higher ups to get change. I think continuing to go every week, but engaging in those conversations with those who are on that Mormon spectrum, because a lot of things in the church come from top down, but a lot also goes from the bottom up. And so we're talking about individuals with real lives. Too often we get worried about the organization itself and those who run the organization, but if we focus on the individuals and their lives and engaging in this conversation in a healthy, respectful way, we're going to impact way more people in truth and value opposed to just leaving and closing off that conversation.
Could there be any plausible deniability here? Like, could President Monson have come out of his room and been like, God said so? And everybody's like, all right, good. Washing my hands of this. We're good. We're good. He said, God said so. We're going to say God said so.
They've done that in the past, but this is not confusion. This isn't confusion. They are smart, intelligent men with plenty years of experience, education, and training in clergy. They do not say anything lightly because they are under such a huge microscope. This was not an act of confusion.
Well, let's jump into this next topic. I mean, we could talk about this at length, but I think there's a common thread. The LGBT issue has people up in arms, obviously, but we have this other thing now that affects even more people, mm-hmm. I would say, than the LGBT issue, and that is medical cannabis here in Utah.
Yes.
We're trying to become the 24th state to legalize this, and one of our great senators, Senator Mark Madsen, who is a grandson of one of the presidents of the church, the grandson of Ezra Taft Benson. He's a faithful Mormon. He's jumped through all the quote-unquote Mormon hoops to do this, to explore the medical cannabis issue. And he's crafted this great bill, done a lot of work, and then the church comes out specifically against it last week.
Yes.
Were you privy to any of the machinations there?
Hey there, ladies, gentlemen, and everyone in between. Paul Duane here. We had to take a quick pause from the conversation to make some time for words from our sponsors on the network. In the meantime, if you've been enjoying the show, I want to let you know you can check out past episodes of the show on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, or the Spreaker app. Or you can just visit the show website, paulduane.net, where you can find off-air extras, articles, essays, photos. If you like what you've been hearing on the show, please share it with a friend. Every new member of the tribe adds value to what we are doing here. So sit tight. We're going to be back shortly with more from Justin Anderson here on The Paul Duane Show. Shake and shiver. Welcome back. We're going to jump back into the conversation with Justin Anderson.
The church comes out specifically against it last week.
Yes.
Were you privy to any of the machinations there?
Yes, on the medical cannabis bill I was.
I've met with
several leaders of the church, the ones I've mentioned earlier, about Senator Mattson's bill. And they've been telling the legislators that they were going to remain completely neutral on it. They weren't going to show any opposition or support for the bill. And that slowly began to change. And so I was up there to strongly encourage the church to remain silent on the issue. I didn't want them to support it or anything like that. I wanted the bill to fail or pass on its own merits. And I was fairly confident 2 weeks before the legislature started that we were going to be successful in this. And then the church lobbyist showed up, full-time lobbyist paid on the dime of the church, showed up at the Capitol, expressed opposition on behalf of the church, and later that week, the church made its public statement from the church office building showing complete opposition to those who are ill receiving medical cannabis, which indirectly supports these patients to be criminals and face prison because their doctors want to make a specific prescription.
In the top leadership of the church, are there any who are supporting this? Is
not
there confusion? Is there unity? What's going on?
There was not whole unity over the LGBT issue, but from what I can tell over this specific issue, I've only heard opinions from one or two of the members of the 12 apostles, and they've both been opposed to it, but I haven't heard anything from the other apostles on this specific issue. And they haven't provided any logical reasoning until a few days ago, which was still incoherent reasoning.
I mean, they were specific about the THC content.
Yes.
In so far as there's another competing bill that would provide cannabis extract that has no THC in it, and they said, we have no problem with that bill. We have a problem with Mattson's bill, which is for whole plant cannabis. And Senator Mattson talks about, speaking to the lobbyist and saying, what's the problem here? Mm-hmm. Is it the THC? And the lobbyist gives the nod and says, yeah.
Senator Mattson has 18 feet of research. If he were to print all of his research he has for the legislature on his bill, it would be 18 feet tall. This is out of fear and lack of understanding. In the church's statement, they also mentioned since it's still illegal federally, they have a little bit of concern over that. But that's the first time they've ever actually shown any bowing down to any federal laws before. They usually oppose them like hell and go to change the laws.
Right. And as far as the omnibus bill that was just recently passed that defunded the prosecution of medical cannabis on the state level, did they give any deference to that? Are they paying attention to that?
I doubt they're paying attention to that. Again, these are real people with real lives. These people are not statistics. These people are not criminals. These people are our neighbors, our friends and family, our business owners in the community who want to take care of their lives, who want to be functional moms and dads, who want cannabis so their child doesn't have to have 80 seizures a day. We as the church, is opposing these people and drastically impacting their lives for the worse without any consideration for research.
We have a studio audience here. You guys want to say hi real quick? Woo! All right, these people have questions and for you. You mind taking a few?
Perfect.
Let's do it. All right, Michelle.
Yes, I have a question regarding the medical cannabis bill. And I'm curious, just as a regular citizen, what kind of power does the LDS Church have politically? You being someone who knows more and may be behind the scenes, do they have actual power to influence this bill, or is it just their opinion in general that's getting people upset?
They have authority as much as any other lobbyist at the Capitol, where an organization will pay people to go influence legislation and talk with the legislators, but that's where their authority rests legally. As members of the Mormon Church, the first rule we have in the Mormon Church is obedience to our leaders. And the supermajority of the House and a supermajority of the Senate identify as Mormon. And part of that faith is they do not check their faith at the door. And the church lets them know that their faith does not stop at the door when they are acting in their official capacity. So when the church makes a position or a statement, to the general public, it's just another opinion from another special interest group. But for those legislators who identify as LDS, their faith is called into question if they do not follow the opinion and statement of the church. And there is no specific repercussions that could occur, but it is in the realm of possibility if they do vote against the LDS church. And that is a very real possibility for these people. And so they are first a member of the church and second a senator. And our entire executive branch is also members of the church. And so the church has a unique perspective on the hill at the state capitol.
So no official power, but in a de facto sense, immense amounts of power. We've got another question. Want to pass the mic over?
Hi. My question is in regards to the LDS's church's statement with medical cannabis. What do you think led to that statement? I mean, we've heard the church make statements before in the past with larger issues like gay marriage. What do you think led to them making the statement ultimately?
That's a very good question. The church permits members to use medical cannabis if they live in a state where it is legal. And so there's a large question as, if they're making it legal in Utah, what's the fuss? Why make this their fight? And so there's a few interesting, beliefs why that is. And I think it comes down to just making sure, because there is a social movement within the state of Utah with LGBT equality and other social issues that are considered left issues. And so I think this is just to ensure that the conservative movement is a priority in state politics. I think it really just comes down to petty politics and to make sure that the members are aware that conservative values are more important than liberal values. But it really begins to get confusing when the church talks about freedom, agency, and accountability. We expect as Mormons that no one can tell us how to live our faith, but we'll take that freedom and begin to limit someone else's. And so it becomes a game of hypocrisy. And as soon as anyone disagrees with us, we think we're persecuted.
Got another question here. You want to pass the mic over?
Yes, thank you. There have been some interesting questions in the media regarding the correlation between lobbying and bribery. Would you care to elaborate upon the questions drawn up between these correlations and your personal stance with regard to your own job security?
Lobbying and bribery, there's definitely differences. Lobbying is just providing your perspective and understanding and providing research. We have a citizen legislature, and so these guys are part-time. They're only 45 days a year is when they're in session. And so lobbyists provide information, and they attempt to persuade them to change their position by informing them. Bribery, from what I understand, is using trading goods, paying legislators, things of that nature. And the LDS Church definitely does not participate in bribery, but they do use its religious influence in ways that other churches cannot in Utah.
Would then a paid-for position based upon lobbying, could that possibly be perceived as bribery with regard to paying for someone's influence in a political session rather than simply paying for a simple quid pro quo action based upon payment? Is not the opinion and the representation based upon money, not necessarily counted number of voters, then not a correlation between monetary rather than popular vote opinion?
So if I understand right, legislators do not receive any funds for their votes. They can during elections, We vote at the ballot box, but also with our dollar, with their campaigns. But during the session, they don't receive any funds from lobbyists or things of that nature. That happened with John Swallows in Utah. We all know how the Attorney General went down with criminal prosecution. But in Utah, we have a very transparent legislature when it comes to finance, that they have to file their reports very regularly.
So it's more like, you know, to fully understand the power that the church has over the legislature, you have to really get into the temple. You know, and you have to understand that when faithful Mormons go to the temple, they make covenants of obedience to the church, even to the point of giving up their own lives.
Yes.
That's one of the things that they covenant to do. It's really serious stuff. And although nobody in modern times has had to give their life up, that is part of the verbiage of the temple ceremony. And every one of those legislators have made that covenant. And so if anything, it's not really bribery. It's spiritual extortion.
It's not anything less than spiritual extortion. It's levering power from these legislators and holding their spirituality and their faith above them, telling them that if they vote otherwise, that they are no longer following the prophet, which entails a domino effect of what could happen to you religiously. And that is very scary. As Mormons, our faith is our identity. It is who we are. And so in a way, we can almost take away the identity of the legislators by the political influence of the church.
So we're getting to the end here, and I want to end this on a more personal note. You know, you've been exceedingly candid tonight, which has been amazing. You still identify as a member of the church, and you still talk about your love of the tenets that are taught in the church, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So as an active Mormon, how do you reconcile this? And what would you say to the other people out there who are saying, look, I love the church, I love my faith, I'm having a really hard time with this. What do you have to say to them?
So I do identify as a Mormon because to me, my faith is much more than public relations statements released from a desk of a staffer in our church office building. My faith to me is more about my relationship with God. And but it begins to get a little bit muddled when church politics comes around. And so to those, I would say to proceed slowly, to go back and to figure out what you truly believe in, and to have confidence in your faith, and that you do not have to fit into dogmas, that no one can give you a piece of paper with bullet points of what you must believe. To stand on your own two feet, find your true self and what you truly believe, and be honest with yourself. It can be very difficult to do that. These are basic concepts that we teach children. But as we grow older, it can be very difficult. And so I would just say proceed slowly and to be honest with yourself.
Love that.
You guys are too nice.
Justin, thank you so much for coming out tonight.
Thank you, Paul.
I appreciate it. All right, give it up for Justin Anderson. It's been a great show. Stay tuned. We'll have more coming up here on The Paul DeWayne Show.